Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour at 12 AM. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Joshua's Long Day when we come back. Well, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is, in fact, carried on in gold and silver coin to this day, but public business is and has been conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks and bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Now, back in 1965, Congress said that there was no difference in the value of gold and silver coin, on the one hand, and clad coin and currency on the other. And that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper versus gold. Now, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin because they didn't have any other purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for you and I to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. These politicians knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate us, a free people, they would first have to take away our gold and silver coin to take away our rights to property and to destroy those property rights under the first plank to the Communist Manifesto. So if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal basis, the foundation for all of our liberties. Now, let me teach you how to do just that. And this is in my business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you'd like more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, educational, entertaining, and free. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc, remember, for adult home study. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of Joshua's Long Day. We covered about 30 pages here out of Harry Rimmer's book, The Harmony of Science and Scripture. Rimmer, in his book, referred to a book called Joshua's Long Day, written by Professor Totten back in 1890. And I mentioned to you last time that astronomy is that outside evidence. It is the physical manifestation, the evidence that we need to corroborate both present and past eclipses and astronomical phenomena that will specifically and positively identify the date and time of Joshua's Long Day. Remember, one of the three criticisms that the higher critics advance is that if such an event as the stopping of the world had occurred, then there would be some physical evidence, or there would be some post-Joshua's Long Day evidence, and it's astronomical in nature. Now, I don't know if anybody prior to Totten came up with this. I suspect that the Egyptians, Chinese, Babylonians, and Hebrews all knew this. I have not seen any specific information or evidence along that line other than the references made by both Rimmer and Totten in both of their books. Now, remember, God requires that we prove all things. Now, religious people don't prove anything. They just accept it on faith. Faith is Christianity. Without faith, Christianity would be dead. Christians accept on faith certain dogma. Whether it's true or false, whether it's provable or unprovable, they don't prove jack squat. That's because they don't follow the scriptural injunction to prove all things and study the scripture to prove whether or not these things are true. So if we follow the scripture, then God himself says, "Don't believe me because I told you so. Why don't you prove it?" So let's take a look here at the shadow, the dial of Ahaz, because remember, Joshua's long day comes in two parts. The first part was that God stopped the earth for approximately one whole day. One whole day. That was 23 hours and 20 minutes. What happened to the other 40 minutes, and is that identifiable? And yes, that's identifiable also.
And when God brought it up to a full day, he reversed the earth's course and moved it back. So the second time, he not only stopped the earth, but he rotated it back 10 degrees and then started it up again. Now, I don't know which one of these tricks is harder. First of all, the critics, remember, said in the last program, that violates known law. Now, wait a minute. If God is the lawmaker and the creator, then he can change his own laws. And that's just the way law is. You know, Congress can create a law and then they can repeal it. They can enforce it or they can choose not to enforce it. You know, it's their call. They can do it. God isn't any different. He's a lawmaker. That's why we call him a sovereign. He makes law and then he can modify it or change it. He says, you know, that the earth is his footstool. Now, when I'm sitting in front of my TV, I've got a footstool. I can push it forward. I can stick my toes under it and I can pull it back. I can tip it upside down. I can remove it from the room. You know, that's my prerogative. I find it hard to believe that this God over here who calls the earth his footstool is unable to move it around in the same way that I can move my footstool around. Now, Dr. Totten starts off this way. He says, sharing the attention of the faithful and equally demanding that of the merely scientific stands the complement of Joshua's long day, namely, the absolute turning back of the sun in the time of Hezekiah. To reject one is to reject the other, even more positively, and to accept either. Logically, then, demands the recognition of both. The latter is referred to three times in the Bible, and we quote each account at length. Now, the first 10 pages rehash the story of Joshua and the battle. Now, I already covered Joshua and the battle in Rimmer's book. You can read that story over and over again for yourself. But since we've covered it, let's go on to the next step. Now, the next step is this Hezekiah and the sundial of Ahaz, and that other 40 minutes that needs to be accounted for. So here on page 11, he starts off with Isaiah chapter 38. In verse 1, it says, Hezekiah, having received a message of death by prayer, has his life lengthened. The sun goes down 10 degrees backwards for a sign of that promise and his song of thanksgiving. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, came unto him and said unto him, Thus saith the Eternal, the Lord God, set your house in order, for you shall die, and you shall not live. So Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall, and he prayed unto the Eternal. And he said, Remember now, O Lord, I beseech thee, how I have walked before you in truth and with a perfect heart, and I have done that which is good in your sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. Then came the word of the Eternal to Isaiah, saying, You go and say to Hezekiah, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David your father, I have heard your prayer, and I have seen your tears, and behold, I will add unto your days 15 years. And I will deliver you this day and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria, and I will defend the city. And this shall be a sign unto you from the Eternal, that the Eternal will do this thing that he has spoken. Behold, I will bring again the shadow of the degrees which has gone down in the sundial of Ahaz 10 degrees backwards, so that the sun returned 10 degrees by which degrees it was gone down. Now the writing of Hezekiah the king of Judah, when he had been sick and was recovered of his sickness, I said, In the cutting off of your days I shall go to the gates of the grave. I am deprived of the residue of my years. And I said, I shall not see the Lord, even the Lord in the land of the living. I shall behold man no more with the inhabitants of the world. Mine age is departed and is removed from me as a shepherd's tent. And I have cut off like a weaver my life, and I will cut me off with pining sickness from day even to night will you make an end of me. I reckon till morning that as a lion so will he break all my bones. From day even to night will you make an end of me. And like a crane or a swallow, so did I chatter. Did I mourn as a dove? My eyes fail with looking upward. O Lord, I am oppressed. Undertake for me. What shall I say? He has both spoken unto me, and himself has he done it. And I shall go softly all my years in the bitterness of my soul. Hezekiah also said, What is the sign that I shall go up to the house of the Eternal? Now, this story about Hezekiah is in Isaiah chapter 38, verses 1 through 22. It's in 2 Kings chapter 20, verses 1 through, let's see what I've got here, 1 through 11. It's repeated again in 2 Chronicles chapter 32, verses 24, 25, and 26. And that's us 10 degrees on the sundial at 40 minutes. Now, on page 17, starts off, he says, the elements verified. So now there's plenty of evidence in the Bible that talks about this thing of the sun or the sundial going backwards. Now, I hear more argument about, or I hear more complaint, I hear more disbelief concerning Joshua's long day, and nobody ever raises this sundial or this 40 minutes here with the sundial of Ahaz. Now, these two events go together hand in glove. Both of them are preposterous on their face. Until you look into the evidence, and then let's prove all things and hold fast that which is good. And we can do this by looking at the astronomy. Now, I personally am not an astronomer. I don't have a telescope. And if I had one, it wouldn't do me any good because I wouldn't know what the hell I was looking at and wouldn't know how to calculate it or figure it, wouldn't know how to read the numbers and the code that goes with it. So what I have to do is to apply this biblical principle. It's a principle that we use in law. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. So let's bring in three credible witnesses and let's see whether or not these three witnesses agree in their testimony. There's an old test that we use. It's called the Yikwo test. And we use this test to see whether or not somebody's telling the truth. We verify the facts that they're giving us. And then we do the cross-examination. We apply those 23 tests in cross-examination to see whether or not these guys can agree and tell the same lie twice. All right, now let's take a look at it. He starts off, he says, it is, of course, impossible to give any adequate idea of the scope of the calculations which I have conspired to bring out of the astrochronological results enumerated in this paper. The mere figures are of no interest save to the verifier, and even to him the eventual results will suggest far better ways of testing their accuracy than a mere going over of the tedious steps of the original and complex operation in making this determination. If the results are correct, they must answer every other test which can be put upon them, and it is in perfect confidence that they will acquit themselves in this respect that they are now given to the world. In the meantime, therefore, the chief point of interest to the scientific world is the explicit fixing of all of the elements of the Beth-Horon conjunction in modern terms, and then from a modern starting point as well as in biblical terms, and from a biblical starting point for the sake of the few who will be equally concerned to view it that way, and so for both to give the entire compass of the cycles which span all of human history. To recapitulate, therefore, in anticipation of our discussion, Joshua's long day actually consisted of 23 1/3 hours added to the 24 regular hours which marked the day of the winter solstice of the year 2555 AM, the autumnal equinox beginning of which year was 3333 solar years ago, reckoning from Sunday, September 22nd, 1889 AD. Now these 47 1/3 hours were considered as two full days by the calendar keepers of that time, and the single day, which was therefore intercalated by them, was more than, or chronologically ahead of the truth by 40 minutes, a fact of which the Hebrews certainly seem to have preserved a very careful record down to the days of Hezekiah, when, by an additional operation of divine power, the calendar was set absolutely correct. The days thus covered between the sunsets of the day in question were the 24th and 25th days of the fourth civil month of 2555 AM. I might point out here, yeah, AM means after the creation of man. So Adam was created 2555 years before Joshua's long day. 1656 years elapsed to Noah's flood, from Adam to Noah's flood, 1656. Then go from 1656 to Joshua's long day, and it takes you up to 2555. Now, Totten points out that the Roman and Julian calendars are incorrect, and that he considers them to be poor, if not idiotic, in the calculation of time. So Totten calculates all of his time from the creation of Adam through the biblical chronology to the present time, which from his perspective is 1889. And then he works backwards from 1889 and lists the years and tries to avoid. He said, I try to avoid AD and BC, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Said, now, if you want to work it that way, you're going to add a lot of steps. Now, I'm presuming that some of you people out there may actually be able to work this mathematical calculation. I can't. I'm not that smart. I don't have any letters after my name, but I'm sure that some of you out there who do have letters can take up this challenge. Remember, this book is put out by Destiny Publishers now. See if you can get a copy. I looked for 20 years before I finally found it here at Destiny. Destiny Publishers, Merrimack, Massachusetts. And you might put the name Howard Rand in connection with Destiny Publishers. That was his company. And the zip code is 01860. That's 01860. 01860. Merrimack, Massachusetts, Destiny Publishers. Now, they may still be in business. Another factor, you might be able to go to a Bible bookstore and pick up this book called Joshua's Long Day, because Destiny Publishers, I think, put out a number of religious-type books. All right, so going on here says that the days thus covered between the sunsets of the day in question were the 24th and 25th days of the fourth civil month of 2555 AM, the 113th and 114th days of that calendar year. And it was the 91st and 92nd days after the 2555 year's completed solar year from creation. dating from the autumnal equinox to equinox according to the universal method of all ancient nations down to Rome. They were also the last day of the 8th and the first day of the 9th lunation of the 2634th lunar year from the same epoch, Mosaic creation, or the 933,285th day of the world's duration, being respectively a Tuesday and a Wednesday. I want you to notice here that this guy's pretty specific. 933,285 days elapsed until that Tuesday, July the 22nd, we call it today, in the 2555th year from Adam. Or reckoning by reverse cycles from the solar eclipsing new moon of Tuesday, June 17th, 1890, Joshua's long day was 3,435 lunar years and 10 lunations ago. For example, 41,230 lunations, or from this same eclipse, it was 1,217,531 days past. Now, the above mentioned last eclipse of history marked the 72,834th completed lunation of the moon, or the middle of its 6,070th lunar year, or it fell 4.5 days short of our summer solstice of 1890 AD. For example, of the 5,888¾ years of solar duration, or finally it took place upon the 2,150,816th day of the world, and was the 22,862nd eclipse, which has occurred since the dawn of time. So if you want to know how many eclipses had occurred between the day Adam was created and June 17th, 1890, the answer was 22,862. Finally, and in general terms, the Beth-Horon conjunction was due 13 minutes past 11 a.m. on the first of the days identified, but owing to the stoppage of all relative motion between the three bodies, and for all we know, throughout the entire universe, it was delayed about one whole day, 23 1/3 hours, and thus did not occur until 10:32 a.m. the next day, which was the Wednesday aforementioned. For example, the silence or intercalation covered a part of both Tuesday and Wednesday, and the next sunset was the beginning of Thursday, the 933,287th day of the world. The elements of the sundial incident during Hezekiah's reign are as follows. It occurred at the absolute instant of the autumnal equinox in the year of the world 3293, at the end of the astronomical year 3293, and at the beginning of astronomical year 3294. The event took place practically at high noon, for example, 7.5 minutes before 12 o'clock as we reckon today. The day was the 1,202,744th day from creation, which was Wednesday, the 18th day of the first civil month of 3293 a.m. in the ancient Hebrew cycle. The moon, though, involved in this incident could not be mentioned because the moon was just short of its entrance into the fourth quarter. Therefore, at that moment, for example, absolutely was below the eastern horizon. There was no Palestine landmarks by which to fix her place in the sky. And that the moon, too, reversed her orbital motion cannot be denied because for her present place in arc reverses through both this event and Joshua's, and it strikes creation's first hour without error. This could not have happened had the moon not been equally and relatively influenced in Hezekiah's day as well as it had been in the day called Joshua's long day. Now there's the conclusion of Professor Totten. He begins with the conclusion and then continues in the book with the methodology, or as he starts off here on, let's see what page we're on here, on page 23, called the argument. So he's going to make the argument now. And he starts off by saying, the earnest seeker after truth may enter her temple by either one of several parallel corridors, which upon examination he will find to be joined by a sufficient number of cross passages to take him anywhere throughout the edifice. Now along any one of these transepts he will find corresponding treasures, no matter in what main corridor he may be loitering. To mention but a few, astronomy, chronology, secular and sacred history, lead alike directly onward to the altar, and it is immaterial which corridor we select, but it is satisfactory to compare the vistas afforded along each, and thus obtain a better comprehension of the whole building so fitly joined together. Now I want you to notice that Totten followed the lines first of astronomy, then chronology, and then secular and sacred history. Now we mentioned this thing of history. The Polynesians, Egyptians, Hebrews, Babylonians, and the Chinese all have historical documents that point back to Joshua's long day. What I don't know is if these historical sources also have historical records that point back to Hezekiah's missing 40 minutes. That wasn't discussed here in the book, or if it was, I missed it. Joshua's long day is mentioned in those five sources historically. Now, chronologically, we can follow this through the Bible. And astronomically, we can follow that through the astronomical records, or the records that have been maintained by Greeks, Romans, Egyptians, Babylonians, and Chinese for thousands of years. The idea that we invented astrology or astronomy, not astrology, but astronomy, is preposterous. Stonehenge, for example, is an astronomy observation post. Here in America, there were a number of astronomical observation points, as evidenced by the mounds out here in the Midwest along the Mississippi River. These people were advanced. They were not baboons dragging their knuckles on the ground. Now, the only object of this present guidebook is to point out some few of the lateral correspondences in the temple and to demonstrate that they're parts of the same plan of architecture, in that they severally reflect their counterparts on either hand. Now, upon June 21st, 1890, it was announced by the author that as of the final result of several years of close calculation, that he had succeeded in identifying the conjunction of the sun and moon at which, as it is written in the sacred record, Joshua's long day occurred, and that his calculations completely vindicated the biblical chronology. Now, that was Professor Totten, and he said that he had completed it and announced it on June 21st, 1890. Now, remember, there were two other astronomers that have also made independent verifications of these same facts that were reported by Harry Rimmer, who wrote his book in 1936. So between 1890 and 1936, there have been at least three independent corroborations of Totten's work, so reported by Totten and Harry Rimmer. Now, I have not personally examined these other two verifications, these other two astronomers' works. I've got their names here, but I haven't looked up those books. All right, boys and girls, hang on here. We've got to give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners, and these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors and publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily wholly endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing two books, The Harmony of Science and Scripture by Harry Rimmer, and Joshua's Long Day and The Dial of Ahaz, written by Charles Totten. One of them, Totten's book, written in 1890, and probably can be obtained in a Bible bookstore. Give it a try and see what happens. It's published by Destiny Publishers, the owner of Destiny, a guy by the name of Howard Rand, who I talked to about 20 years ago, and he was in his 90s then. Nice old guy. Well, I liked him right off the bat. He operated a Bible bookstore or a publishing house or something. I don't know exactly what it was. He was a religious guy. I remember that. He was interested in getting you saved. He wanted to get everybody saved. I can recall that. He had a number of books that he was recommending. Well, it was years later that I discovered that this same Howard Rand had this book called Joshua's Long Day. Hell, I'd been looking for this thing for 20 years. I couldn't find it anywhere, which just goes to show you how dumb I am. I didn't know where to look. But once I got a hold of the book, I read it. And it's, you know, if you're a scholarly type, if you're interested in finding things out, it's of great interest. If you're a guns and ammo man and you're kind of looking for action-packed adventure over here, this book is going to be a real drag. But you ought not to believe what I tell you. Remember that God himself said, you know, that guy Gordon's a liar. He can't believe anything that he tells you. Why don't you prove all things and then hold fast that which is good? Don't accept this on faith. Prove it. And there's three lines of proof. Remember, Harry Rimmer gave us those three lines. There's history, chronology, and astronomy. So let's go on here. He says there's a secular corroboration for this. It is but natural that this announcement should have begotten a widespread comment, considerable misstatement, and awakened no little controversy and dispute, in view of which it is deemed wise to put the whole matter into as concise a sharp or a shape as it may be without resorting to transcendental mathematics, which the average human being must and does in all calendric work take upon faith. For instance, if almanac makers had to supplement their work by placing an appendix in the work, giving all of the figures incidental to their finished tables, it would be a handicap sufficient to block their entire publication. But some people will say, well, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and the safety of the modern almanac maker consists in the fact that the generation which uses that almanac has constant demonstration of its accuracy every day. Very good, but the writer has almanacs and calendars in his possession extending back to the beginning of the century, almanacs of years before he was born. To him, they're mere history. He cannot summon up his own experience. So what then? Why upon the foregoing premise? He is either forced to recalculate them somehow or other, or else to accept them upon the basis of common sense, and to assume that they must have recorded true events, for otherwise they would have been repudiated by their own generation. Now, this brings us to the gist of the argument in favor of the two events now under consideration. They occurred well within the days of written history, and they were written down into the chronology of the days in question. These two events were consequently accepted in their own day, and they must therefore have had foundation whereupon to claim and effect an entrance into the contemporary history of generations who raised no voice against them. They are admitted into their chronology. Now, I want to point something else out here, that when you come up with the documentation like this guy Cotton has, the higher critics all of a sudden flee the scene, flee the battlefield, and continue their criticism. They continue their criticism, but they never take on the calculations or the numbers head on. Now, if this is false, then surely there's got to be some astronomer, somebody out there that can take it on and say, wait a minute, I calculated it, and this guy, Cotton, is a liar. That these events, that these calculations, these numbers, these historical events didn't occur. That's what we're looking for. Now, remember the one story, the one astronomer that Totten was talking to, one of his colleagues, he said, well, I've proven beyond doubt that this Bible is false. I found the 23 hours, and that's the problem. There's 24 hours missing, but this thing only covers 23 hours and 20 minutes. Therefore, he's out of sync by 40 minutes. If this guy is God, then he should be right on cue. It would seem like to me that if you could find evidence of Joshua's long day, but you couldn't corroborate or couldn't find the evidence for the other 40 minutes, that it wouldn't take anything away from Joshua. But, you know, these people would complain if we hung them with new ropes, wouldn't they? Going on, he says, the writer does not pretend to explain how the day in question was lengthened, but accepts it rather as a literal fact fully corroborated by history. So he did the astronomy, and he says it's fully corroborated by history. Two independent sources, two independent sciences. That is, history on the one hand, chronology on the other, or astronomy rather on the other. And now this guy is going to do it two ways. He's going to show it chronologically through the scripture, and he's going to show it astronomically through the eclipses. That's what he does in this short paper here. It's about 116 pages, as I recall. Let me check that out. Flipping through here, I'm right, it's 117 pages of material. Now, the Greek Herodias, or Herodotus, whom we moderns call the father of history, verifies Joshua's long day by quoting the records shown to him by the priests while he was in Egypt. Now, this is independent testimony, because neither the Greeks nor the Egyptians refer to the Hebrew account as the source of their own. But we may also refer to the Chinese account, who preserves still another independent record of a similar event, no doubt the identical one, as having occurred in the reign of Yeo, Y-E-O, who was contemporary with Joshua. All right. So now Totten, in his book, identifies the Chinese, Egyptians, the Greeks, and the Hebrews, along with the Chinese. Now, if I got that right, I should have Greeks, Egyptians, that's two. Hebrews is three, and the Chinese are four. Four historical sources that this guy, Totten, is citing. I didn't go to those four historical sources. Totten did. He was a professor. He wrote the book. If you've got some reason to believe that the Chinese don't have any such, don't have a history of this, it isn't satisfactory now to prove a negative. It's incumbent that we prove the positive. I haven't done it. He says it's done. Therefore, in 1890, he said it existed. Now, have you got any evidence that in 1890 it didn't exist, or that Totten's lying? Unfortunately for you, Totten's dead and you can't cross-examine. Well, in view of these four independent and widely separated accounts, we should consider the event to be indisputable, well, at least so far as the historical evidence is concerned. And we maintain that no wise man will say a word against the possibility of reducing the relative motion of the three bodies, the earth, moon, and the sun, even to a standstill, until he really knows and can explain how that motion is produced. No less eminent a philosopher than Newton has demonstrated how quickly the earth motion might be slowed down without any appreciable shock to its denizens, and while the scientist can easily illustrate it, the devout astronomer and the undevout astronomer as well can as easily offer a natural method whereby the stoppage could have been brought about. For instance, anyone may see in the windows of the optician a tiny apparatus with four fans, which turn around with considerable speed when they're exposed to the light, and it's perhaps as near an approach to perpetual motion as man's ingenuity can make. If we merely raise our hand to interrupt the direct action of the mechanism in the sun's rays, we immediately reduce the velocity of this apparatus by about one half. Now, a cometary mass, that is a comet, interposed between the earth, the moon, and the sun in Joshua's day might have easily cut off the actinic rays of the sun without affecting the light and heat rays of the spectrum at all, and so have accomplished this phenomenon. How it really was accomplished by God, God only knows. That it was done, however, secular history testifies, and sacred history asserts, and with an authority not to be apologetically ignored by anyone who prays sincerely that he may be sealed with saving faith. Now, it's an unfortunate sign of our times, as we read in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3, that one who enters upon such a calculation as this receives but very little encouragement or response, even from the quarters where he has a right to expect it, while in the scientific world at large, the announcement seems to have begotten little else than disparaging discussion. But nevertheless, a significantly large correspondence has already justified the belief that a publication of the main elements is now demanded in order that they may be verified or overthrown by others. So he says we need to test this theory, test this belief. The writer was led to make his calculation not to find out whether the account was true, but rather because he was convinced that it was true and that it could therefore be proved to the satisfaction of any reasonable man. Now, higher critics are not reasonable men, and you're not going to convince them of doodly squat. So don't cast your pearls before swine or waste your time. This is an exercise for you. If you're sitting there and you're one of those people that says, well, I don't believe the Bible and I don't believe Joshua's long day occurred, you got to take the time, effort, and energy to prove it, because once you've gotten that step out of the way, it's a little shorter step to go back to Genesis 1 and say, you know, this Genesis 1 might be true also. Then you might go forward to Daniel in the lion's den and the three Hebrew princes in the fiery furnace. Jonah and the great fish and the resurrection and so on, and you might come to a conclusion, hey, maybe this isn't as crazy as I thought it was. I got to make a comment right here. I happened to be upstairs talking to one of my students. He was listening to Coast last night. And this is a new thought that just entered my equation here. Remember I mentioned to you the other day a news report, they're planning war at the national level here in the United States. Our White House, our president, planning war with Iran about September. This guy said he thought war with Iran would be underway around sometime in September. And have you been paying attention to this new president over in Iran? I mean, this guy's got his mouth flapping about 40 miles an hour all the time. Well, I was watching the news last night, and on the Lair News Hour, they had a little segment on there, and they're talking about this nuclear development over there in Iran. And the president of Iran said, not only have we enriched uranium, we're going to enrich much more uranium. I don't know, hundreds of times more enriched uranium. Well, that got the Germans and the French and the English and the Russians all up, and, you know, they got real excited, and they said, no, this is a step in the wrong direction, and you ought not to do that. And the United States now is starting to get some allies now in Europe on their side. Well, last night on Coast to Coast, they had a guy on there, and I didn't hear the program myself, but the student was reporting it to me, and he said that the Iranians are doing this intentionally so that they can bring on war. And I've been listening to this guy, this president of Iran, and, you know, the guy, every time he opens his mouth, he's giving us the finger. And he said, this guy that was on Coast to Coast, he said, what they're doing over there, they're getting ready for war. They're trying to foment war with the United States. They're trying to foment a nuclear war with the United States. And he said, they're going to go a step further. They're going to play the oil card. They're going to shut off their 10% production of oil to the world. And he said, God knows where the price of oil is going to go from $70 a barrel when you just shut off 10% of the oil. And the reason he said that it's at $70, not because there's any shortage right now. There's no shortage. But there's an anticipated shortage coming up in September. That's just, you know, 3 or 4 months away. We're talking about, as I speak, we're in April. We're talking about May, June, July, and August, 4 months. And then we'll be into September. And so in that 4 months, these guys are building up supplies of oil because there's an anticipated cutoff. Now, there's a corollary to this. The Iranians now have, I saw this in the International Forecaster. You might want to subscribe to that. I think it's pretty valuable. International Forecaster says there's 400,000 Iranian troops on the border with Iraq. Now, I'm not a real military man. I'm not a general or anything. But the last time I heard, there was 135,000 Americans in Iraq. And the last time I had a big fight on the playground, when there was three guys fighting against me, I noticed that it was hard to overcome three other guys. Sometimes it's kind of hard to overcome one other guy. By the time you get two guys jumping on you, it makes it just twice as hard. And by the time you get three guys jumping on you, it gets to be nigh on impossible. So here you got, on the one hand, a plan for nuclear war in Iran, which is, by the way, being reported now in the American press. There was a big flap the other day. The president said this is just wild speculation. Well, you know, there's always somebody somewhere that's leaking this information is what goes on here. And some guy's out here leaking the information. Now, you might be saying, well, what in hell has that got to do with Joshua's long day? Well, it has to do with an obscure prophecy in the book of Amos, in which the prophet Amos said that the day is going to be cut short. In other words, time is going to speed up and it's going to become dark at noonday. So not only did God stop the world in Joshua's time, speed it up in Hezekiah's time, he's going to stop it again. I mean, this guy says, this God here in the scripture evidently, thinks that he can just start and stop the world at will. Now, here's the kicker on these Iranians over here. See, and I didn't know this, but he said these Muslims believe that they believe in the second coming also. You know, instead of the second coming of Christ, it's the second coming of Allah or somebody. I don't know who's coming, but somebody's coming back, some God somewhere. And they don't believe that he can come back until the nuclear war is either over or underway, and they're going to help it along a little bit. They're over there trying to foment war. So on the one hand, you've got this trigger-happy gang in the White House here in the United States, and then you've got this lunatic over in Tehran who's trying to start a war. I mean, I think these guys have a death wish. I think these guys want to be martyrs. God help us with these religious guys. I've said it before. I'll say it again. The most dangerous people in the world are religious. God, they just scare the living peewad out of me. You know, give me an atheist. You know, give me a Gnostic anytime to these religious guys. But, you know, the world's made up of millions of these religious guys, and these guys have bombs. And they want to strap them on and come into the local Pizza Hut and sit down and have lunch with you. That's what bothers me. All right, so let's take a look now at the inception of the problem. Now, the writer was led to make his calculation not to find out whether the account was true or not. I already believe that. But rather because he was convinced that Joshua's long day was a fact and that it could therefore be proved to the satisfaction of any reasonable man. And I think that he accomplished the goal. And the key here now is reasonable man, because there's always irrational and unreasonable people. See, people that don't want to obey God and keep his commandments are always going to say, they're always going to be higher critics, they're always going to say, I don't believe it. Again, your belief or my belief doesn't affect the truth one way or the other. But whether or not this day did occur is pretty important, because if it helps you grasp and understand these end times. Nuclear war is coming, and Ezekiel said so. So did Jesus in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. And if you pay attention to the book of Revelation, what comes down in the book of Revelation is a biblical description of nuclear war worldwide. And the Messiah said that if he doesn't interfere, doesn't intervene, no flesh is going to be saved alive on the planet. The other day some guy said to me, does that mean every cockroach and every microbe is going to be destroyed? I kind of think so. He said no flesh would be saved alive. Does that mean every tree, every bush, every moss? No, he didn't go that far. He said no flesh would be saved alive. I would assume that that's animals. human beings, seals, porpoises, polar bears, probably cockroaches and ants, probably bacteria. I don't know about viruses, and I can't tell you about trees and ferns and shrubs. Sounds like to me that that's a pretty horrific time that we're facing here. And now we got this guy over in Iran trying to generate World War III, nuclear war. Oh, by the way, the Chinese just signed a deal with the Iranians worth about $20 billion. If you remember last year, the Chinese wanted to buy an oil company here in the United States, and we said, no, we're not going to let you spend your money on that here. So they went over to Iran, and they made a $20 billion deal with the Iranians. Now, if we go over there and bomb Iran, that's going to kind of squirrel their deal with China. I imagine that that might get the Chinese involved on the side of the Iranians. Now, I know a lot of you guys are going to say, well, we'll just go over there and clean those Chinese clocks, you know, and that's what we said in 1941. We'll just go over there to Tokyo and clean those Japanese clocks, and it took 3.5 years to do that, and it was a bloody knockdown, drag-out brawl. So my guess is there's going to be a bloody knockdown, drag-out brawl coming up here with these Chinese. So, you know, you might want to be plugging that into your computer and thinking about that. And if the thing really gets out of whack, you know, you could be looking here at the Battle of Armageddon, which is only a few miles northeast of northwest of Jerusalem. 35 miles, 200 million man army. As far as I know, the only guys in the world that can field that kind of an army would be the Indians and or the Chinese. Indians or Chinese, or maybe even a combination of both of them. So tuck it away in your heart. And keep in mind now that the God of creation, you know, this God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob over here, if this guy's got the power to start and stop the world and do it twice, and he says he's going to do it a third time over here, he might also have, you know, a couple little tricks in his bag over here whereby he might save your bacon out of the fire. You might want to be thinking about that. Tuck it away in your heart. So the inception of the problem, I'm going to put my mark right here on page 27. We'll take it up right there next time when we come back talking about the inception of the problem here, the circumscribed limits on the astronomical proof now of Joshua's long day. That's next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Again, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We'll leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.